This is the Fantasy Focus Books and Authors Podcast, episode 19. Good day and welcome to this episode of the Fantasy Focus Podcast. I'm your host, podcaster and author of Fun Fantasy Reads, Jamie Davis. This podcast is exactly what the title says it is. It's a show focused on everything to do with fantasy books, from epic fantasy to urban fantasy, swords and sorcery, anything else you can think of fantasy. We do it here on the show, so you can expect to find the best and brightest of the authors and books from the various corners of the fantasy book world here on the program. Plus, we have some other special guests we'll pick up along the way, I'm sure. Let's go ahead and start off with my personal update. I'm still working on my latest urban fantasy work. It's a work in progress set in part inside a virtual reality gaming world. I'm really excited about that, and it's giving me some unique challenges, but I've never been one to shy away from that, so I'm pushing through, as I always do. It seems like the middle of the book for a lot of authors tends to bog us down. It's where we... You know, we're excited when we start the book, we're excited when we get towards the end of the book, and in the middle, we're kind of like slogging through, trying to get the things down, make sure the writing's good, make sure we're still pulling in exciting things to happen to our characters. And that's where I am right now. Anyway, I will figure it out. I like to think I can always write my way out of any corner in which I find myself, and this will be no different. When this one comes out later this year, you'll have to tell me if I pulled it off or not. As always, if you're interested in more information about what I'm up to, check out my fan group over on Facebook, Jamie's Fun Fantasy Superfans, and on my website and blog at jamiedavisbooks.com. You can sign up for the newsletter over there and get regular notifications and updates from me. Now let's go ahead and get into our guest for this episode, and I am super excited to say we have Noelle Nichols joining us for the show. Noelle likes writing stories about people trying to be their best selves who struggle with their own morals and circumstances. She says most of this comes from her fascination with trying to figure out why people do the stuff they do. And we all know that people do some stuff that just doesn't make a lot of sense sometimes. So she tries to dig into that and writing about it and constantly analyzes why she herself does things and what could have happened because of it. Noelle writes fantasy to figure out the world around her, and within her characters, you'll find the strength and hope for a better tomorrow, one that can be more fantastical and beyond reality. Other than that, she loves her three border collies, enjoys painting, hiking, dreaming, and reading philosophical thoughts. Say that three times fast. Anyway, check out my chat with Noelle about her books and her take on writing about heroes in a fantastical world. Noelle, I want to welcome you to the Fantasy Focus Podcast. It is so fantastic to have you on the show today.
Thanks, Jamie. I'm really excited to be here and chat with you about books.
Yeah, we're going to have a great time. And let's start off by kind of introducing yourself to the audience. I'm sure some of the readers know who you are, but there might be others that don't. So tell the folks a little bit about yourself and your background.
Yeah, so my name is Noelle Nichols. I'm probably one of the more newer kids on the block, being only published not even a year now. But basically, I love writing about heroic epic fantasy. And I kind of like the heroic aspect just because, I mean, I'm like a diehard fan of anyone who's like a noble cause and is courageous. So I've always been drawn to that. So in my current series, and I probably will continue to write this, I just like exploring people and their internal struggle to like be the best person that they can be. It's just something that's important to me. And I like writing stories about it. And that's kind of my thing, is just thinking about the world and how people react. And that's kind of me and my writing.
Now, did you always want to write? I mean, is that something you've wanted to do since you were very young? Or is this something that came about later in life?
So I'm one of those people that has, I mean, it's a little bit of a sad story, but it's not. So I really wanted to write the same book like 10 years ago in high school. And I happened to kind of get like a critique, some feedback from one of my peers that basically told me that my book felt fake and the emotions didn't feel real and the characters, like, they weren't getting it. So I kind of stopped writing, which is sad. because I feel like I grew as a person because I felt like I didn't have enough life experience to write exactly what I wanted to. Like, I hadn't experienced death. So how can I write about death when I don't know like how personally that feels? So it's something that's been kind of in the back of my head. Like, I've always liked telling stories and I like having like that commentary about things I want to talk about or explore, because writing to me is more like an exploration about the world. Like, I have questions about the world, and fantasy kind of gives me like this cool area to explore some of the things like right and wrong, where it would be kind of awkward to talk to some people maybe about that. So it's something that's come about as I've kind of come back to it. I've circled around to it, and it's become kind of more like a spiritual kind of growth thing for me just recently. Like, maybe 5 years ago, I started taking writing seriously. So it was always there, but now I'm like, this is what I want to do. This is what I'm meant to do.
Well, welcome back, because damn, that just sucks if somebody tells you your story sucks. I mean, every story has some redeeming features. My feeling is always my first drafts are so horrendous that I never let anyone, even my wife, see them at all, ever. Because I just want to get the bones of the story there. I can flesh it out. I can fix things. You know, if I forgot to put an arm on one of them, I can add an arm later, but at least I've got the central part of the story there. And I think that that's something that people miss, is that every story is redeemable. You maybe need a little more work on it. And I'm glad you're back. So thank you for sticking to it and coming back around and realizing your dream. That's awesome.
Yeah, thanks. It's heartbreaking, but I think if you really like something, you'll come back to it. And my first drafts are like a hot mess. I just like word vomit them down, like get it down, and then we'll fix it in editing.
No, the rewrites are where the story, you know, the flesh of the story comes alive. I mean, I feel like I've got a skeleton by the time I'm done the first draft, but I know where the story went and how it got there. Now I can add in the details and the extra character I need, where I leave a little note for myself. We need somebody to drive the cab. So there's all kinds of things I do when I'm writing the first draft that I don't let myself get bogged down. I just want to get the story out. And that's my process. That's not something everybody does, but that's certainly what I do. It sounds like, you know, you kind of get the words out there too.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's one of the biggest myths that, you know, young aspiring writers have, is that they think that, you know, I always have to laugh because they think writing is the hard part. And I'm like, oh man, I was like, I know the secret. Wait until you get to editing, because that's when you have to like make things make sense. You have to have, you know, why are there five characters when there only needs to be one character that has this one motivation? So I always have to laugh because writing is not the hardest part, which some people think it is.
Oh no. And you get to that point where you're like, you had this scene that you were so in love with, and you realize it's a dead end in the story, and you have to pull it out. You have to hack it out of there. No matter how much you love it, it's just not worth doing anything with.
Yeah. Do you put it in a folder? I just delete mine.
Actually, you know what? I've started saving them, because what I found is that like they make great extra content for your readers. So I've started saving them and making them either into short stories that I give away just on my newsletter for people. So like just the newsletter readers get it, and nobody else even knows they exist unless you're on the newsletter. Or I might just share, hey, this is a deleted scene from this latest book. So if you've read it, it comes in like between chapters, this and this, and you might be interested in, this is why I cut it out, but you might be interested in what happens there. And people kind of like that. I think they kind of like, just the same reason people love DVD extras.
Yeah, I love the DVDs. I have, some of my stuff has been like super bad. It's like beyond, it's like, this is the dumbest stuff I've ever written. But I did find in my second book that I'm writing, like I chopped off the entire first 30,000. And I was like, it's a good character moment backstory, but it's not part of the main story. So I was like, man, this is the only time I've ever felt, man, I gotta like put this on the side and share this, because it's cool. But it's like, it's kind of like, you know, turning left when I need to go straight. So I'm pretty excited that I finally wrote something that's like expanding my universe. And it's not just, you know, Noelle trying to write the same scene three times.
Yeah, I don't throw anything away anymore because readers have told me time and again, oh, I wish I could have read, I would have loved to have read that. And so you can give them that opportunity to, you know, to explore that, you know, just flesh that out into its own complete little story arc and say, this is the backstory for this character and why they do what they do in the first couple of scenes. And you might be surprised how excited people are to come and get on your email list or just connect with you on Facebook or something just to have a chance to get access to it.
Yeah, that's totally cool. And it's nice because we didn't always have that. Like, you know, if it's like social media now, we can share all these cool things and we're more connected with our readers. Whereas, you know, at certain times we never got to actually speak to an author. So I'm pretty excited that, you know, it's a bigger playing field and people get to like talk more to other people.
Yeah, I know. I remember the days when if you wanted to talk to an author, you had to physically write them a letter. And I think I wrote to a couple of authors when I was a kid, just, you know, telling them I liked their books and I never heard back from them. But, you know, it was just one of those things. Nowadays, you can, you know, shoot off an email or find them on social media or, you know, it's so much more immediate. And I think that, you know, for me, from my standpoint, I love it. I love hearing, you know, from somebody, especially, you know, I have those writing days where I just don't feel like writing. And I'm in the middle of the story and I feel like I'm just kind of weighed down by everything. And then I'll get that like note on Twitter or a response or a comment on my Facebook page that'll say, oh, I just finished this book. It was, you know, I really enjoyed this character. Thanks so much. And that's the thing that gets me through that day.
Yeah, that's like a little bit of motivation. I always like to think that, you know, I have conversations that I always want to like save them in a little magic vial or something and be like, this is my happy potion for that time when I just feel like I suck as a writer and I can't get through that scene.
Definitely. It sounds like we have similar ways of getting through the day sometimes. Now let's talk a little bit about your characters because I just started reading your book and really am intrigued by the whole idea of this like warrior code that Kilo has. And it's, you know, it's kind of, as you said in your introduction to me that you sent, that it's kind of a based loosely on the warrior code of the Bushido, the samurai.
Yeah. So this is like, I'm going to go like full out nerd zone here.
That's okay. Go for it.
Okay. So I've always loved and been drawn to like the samurai and I like their code, specifically that Bushido code, because I mean, granted, I take the more romantic aspect to this, like, you know, samurai were historically very deadly people who killed and that was their job. But I've always been intrigued by the code that they adhere to, like they spent their life honing, like and dedicating their life to the sword and protecting people. So I kind of have been studying that and I've learned really, I've taken what I loved about it. And then as I wrote it, it kind of evolved. Like the code originally was kind of bland. And I found this with characters, like over time, they just take on a life of their own. And it's just amazing. So like the Bushido is like, you know, that have the seven virtues that they would follow, like, you know, honor, justice, sincerity. So I wrote out all these, you can kind of call them like tenets and stuff. It's more how they live their life. This is the rules and the things that they adhere to because like their life is very hard. Like they're protectors and they need a way to navigate life between right and wrong. And like, what is my duty as a person to protect people? So it's based on that and it's how they navigate. And there's one specifically in there that like throws a big giant wrench in everything, which is, you know, a shadow does not kill unless, you know, the cadet is, you know, if you're saving somebody's life, but you're not supposed to, like all life is sacred. This is like the culture that they're in. Like they value life, even if it's somebody that is trying to, you know, we're kind of transitioning from somebody who's in like peacetime to now we're kind of in wartime. So we need to like rethink who we are as people. And Kilo in particular, really, he's grown up to this creed, like this is what he's trained to do for years. And so when things start coming into play, like, how is he supposed to now feel? Because, you know, if you can't just at a glance decide between right and wrong, like, there's a gray line, and that gray line is what is so interesting, because not everyone's going to decide the same thing, which is what is so fun about this series, is there's multiple characters that have different viewpoints on the exact same creed they've been following. So it's really more of, you know, this is my life, this is what I believe in, but we're at the point in time where we now have to change, which is the same thing that happened, you know, with the samurai, is they were warriors all their life. And then you get to the point where you're in the Meiji Restoration and they're no longer able to be samurais anymore. So what do you do?
It's fascinating. And, you know, it's so easy, I think, and it's a lot of writers, not a lot of writers, but some writers fall back on just having the hero or the main character that just hacks their way through the story. And to have a character that's bound by a code that they can't kill, or they shouldn't kill at least, leaves them with a lot, having to be a lot more creative with problem solving.
Yeah, totally. I've had a couple of people stop reading the book because they just couldn't wrap their head around, like, a different character whose emotions are more, like, withdrawn, because, you know, it's like the warrior way. You're, like, at peace, so you're not going to react to things, you know, as we've been shown a lot of times, like, you're at peace and, you know, this is what you're always been told. So it's like, I don't understand his character, and they just want to, like, shake him. And it's like, it's kind of like, I get super happy because I'm like, oh, I did it right. And then I'm at the same time, I'm like, wow, we are so, like, not aware that there are these different kinds of beliefs and ideals and stuff. So it's fascinating to me.
Oh, it's a clash of cultures. I mean, and, you know, the people, I think that probably explains a lot of what happened in feudal Japan when it came in contact with Western culture. You know, it was a completely different outlook on life and a different view of personal value. And, you know, it's just completely different. And I think that in some ways it broke the society because of that conflict. And that's why they closed Japan for a period of time.
Oh, yeah. I mean, just even thinking just a single person, not even like a big society thing. It's just like, what do you do when, like, everything you've believed is a lie, or you can't follow it anymore because, you know, right and wrong aren't super black and white, and you're just, like, conflicted?
Yeah. And, you know, somebody once said to me that, you know, that gray line between black and white, between right and wrong, is not a line, it's a chasm, and it's a whole lot deeper than you think it is, and there's a lot more going on there than anyone gives you credit until you get stuck in that gray line. And then you have to decide, well, am I closer to the wrong side, or am I closer to the right side of this line?
Right. And then there's, like, different a scale of 1 to 10. It's like, how bad is it what I'm doing? But if it's bad, how can I be doing good at the same time?
So what do you do when you are not writing? What do you do for fun to kind of give yourself that recharge time?
So I'm pretty creative in general. I like painting and drawing. I actually am really hoping one day that I can actually draw, like, not maybe this series, but something else. Like, I'm hoping to kind of do graphic novels and stuff. But I find drawing is one of the things that completely shuts off my brain. Being someone that is constantly, like, has, like, that hamster running in my brain of always thinking about, you know, people's motivations and, oh my gosh, what happens if that happens? Or, you know, just thinking about all these things. I just find that drawing kind of soothes me. And I like painting, specifically fluid painting. I don't know if you've ever heard of that before, but it's basically you pour a bunch of paint in a cup, a bunch of different colors, and then you pour it out and things just happen. And it's very soothing because you have no control over it and you just kind of see what happens, and it's fun and it's different. It recharges me because I'm not having to think about making something right or perfect. It's just fun and creative, and I get to see what happens.
You know, it's funny. All the authors I've talked to on the show have some other creative outlet aside from writing. Like, they love to write and they love their creative aspects of writing, but they have to be creative in other parts of their life too. And you're the first person that's a painter, though. And I'm a musician. I've talked to people that, you know, are really into gaming and love being game masters because of the creative energy that they need to run a game and interact and on the fly and innovate and improvise for the player characters. So just lots of different ways that I think authors continue to feed their creative juices along the way.
Yeah, I think it's kind of essential to have that other outlet, just knowing how demanding and dedicated you have to be to write a book. It's just sometimes nice just having that immediate satisfaction of I just made a painting in a couple hours, or even I just made something different that, you know, kind of stretches muscles. I think that's always important, is to just to learn and see the world kind of with eyes open.
So the Shadows Creed saga, are you looking at that as being a trilogy, or is it going to have a longer story arc? What are your thoughts? Are you kind of leaving it open-ended?
So right now I know for sure it's going to be three books. It originally was just going to be two books, and then so much has happened in the second book. Like, there's so many like points of view that's in it, and there's so many things that are happening because there's a lot to like talk about and to discover. And I'm also one of those people that don't outline, so I'm not 100% sure where the story is going until I just sit down and then I type and then the story just happens. So I'm thinking it's going to be at least three books. I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to finish it all, depending on where my unruly characters seem to go. They seem to drop bombs on me and I'm like, wait, what just happened? Like, you have a secret backstory that now I have to like weave into the story. So it'll definitely be three, maybe four. I highly doubt it'll be five, but we'll see.
No, that's interesting. And I've talked with a lot of authors on the show about that magic of the character surprising you with their actions or their antics. They come up with something that you completely weren't prepared for.
Yeah, it always throws me for a loop. Like, I guess that's one of the best parts, I would say. Like you said, it's the best part about writing is, you know, you can sit there and plot and you can think this is going to happen, but then somehow, you know, even when you're not even thinking about it, that's usually when it happens for me. Like, something will just click in my brain, or I'll just be typing and I was like, somebody says something, I'm like, whoa, I was like, I feel like I'm experiencing this world through the reader's perspective, which is so cool because it surprised me. It's like, wow, I just can't believe that happened.
Yeah, Andy Pelequin on a recent podcast I did with him was talking about, you know, the interaction between your conscious, your subconscious, and your unconscious mind, just the various parts of your brain that the characters live there, and they are part of you, but you don't really realize all the parts of you that are in there, and that's the parts that pop out that catch you by surprise.
Yeah, one of my favorite things to do is, I've seen this in a couple of author friends, is that if you know somebody really well, like even if it's fantasy and they've like tried to hide it, sometimes I can pick up on, oh my gosh, that is so-and-so, is like belief in that character. And I think that's cool, like at that secretive level, that you can like see how their personality has influenced like a story that's not, you know, it's hidden beneath the surface, but I always find it super cool. And I always wonder, I'm like, man, are people going to judge me because they can totally read what I believe in this book?
Well, but is that a bad thing? I mean, I certainly infuse a lot of my own personal belief systems and themes into my stories. And I think that's one of the things that fantasy lends itself to. Fantasy and science fiction give you an opportunity to build a world that is a vision of what you want, or a vision of what you see is wrong with the world that you live in. And you think about Gene Roddenberry's Star Trek, that was his vision for a perfect future where mankind no longer had wars with each other, that they were able to feed everyone and live in a society that continued to advance science and energy and all those things. That was his vision. And he couldn't do that in any other place, but in that world that he built. So I think there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, no, I would agree with you that it's definitely our place to explore, you know, different ideals, beliefs, and just like views of the future. It's freeing in a way, but it's also, I think there's a fear in a lot of us that, you know, we were the weird kids growing up who always were made fun of because maybe we were a little bit different because we dreamed about, you know, a world that was a little bit different. So I think it touches a little bit on, you know, oh, this is a little bit different than the norm. Like, I'm not following the tropes. And I believe that, you know, people should be noble and courageous and stuff. Whereas, you know, everyone, but again, that's always the fun part too, is just to see what other people believe. And I love reading new stories from like different cultures and worlds. And it's fascinating to me to be able to explore that because I feel like we're more open in, you know, in writing and in books and in music even than we are being able to talk face to face because we get to put like, you know, our experience inside the book. So it becomes very personal to everybody, and that's kind of the magic of it all.
Oh, I agree. And you know, it's funny, I every now and then I run into an old teacher of mine, which I'm getting older, there aren't too many of them left, unfortunately, but I was a bit of a handful. I think my mother and my father were dealt with a lot of nonsense for me coming home from school, and it was the teachers always say the same thing when they find out the different things that I've done in my life and especially my writing. And they just say, I knew you'd find a way to take that creative energy that drove you nuts in school and do something positive with it. And, you know, that kind of makes me feel good. I mean, they seem like they, despite the fact they had to get on my case a little bit, that they seem to have some belief that I was going to pull it through in the end, which is kind of nice.
Yeah, no, that's great that you were able to discover, I guess, where to put that energy and thoughts. And I think it's one of the we're like the luckiest people because not everybody has that. So I always have to stop and take a moment that it's like, you know, some people never find what they like. And, you know, here I am being able to write stories and sharing it with other people and getting to talk to them about that. So it's one of the best things, I think, being an author.
So I know you don't outline, so I guess you don't have like a plan for what's next after Shadows Creed Saga?
So I have another story that is in the works. It's not about samurai. It is about a traveling merchant, a tea merchant. And that one, I'm not sure how I would do it. I was thinking it might be episodic. But after Shadows Creed, I'm definitely, like, I'm keeping the same heroicness, and I want it to be more of a conversation between people, because I found in this series, some of my favorite moments are not, like, the epic battle scenes. It's actually the moments where we kind of, like, pull back, and we're actually, you know, hey, you know, let's take a moment to talk about death. Let's talk about, you know, how you move forward, not having this person in your life anymore. So I kind of want to write a story that encapsulates that a little bit more, so that's on the back burner, but I can't really focus on more than one project because I feel like I get distracted by the shiny new object. So I'm trying to finish this one, and then this one's probably where I'm going, but we'll see.
Awesome. Well, and that's all right. I wasn't sure what I have, like a spreadsheet with story ideas that I,
oh my, you know, gosh.
When I get one, I just go into the spreadsheet and open it up and put in, you know, like a rough title and like a 2 or 3 word description of what I'm thinking of. And then, you know, I let it go because I just, ideas pop into my head all the time.
Yeah, I write them down on sticky notes. And sometimes it's just like, I usually get like a snatch of dialogue that I think is really cool. And then I just put it in a box. And every once in a while I read through it. Like sometimes it'll be this current series about like something cool I want Kilo to say. And then I'll try to work it in from there. But I have a box of sticky notes about random stuff. So I kind of have the same thing going on.
It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. So how do you like when you're reaching out to readers and talking to people online? Is there a place you prefer to do that? Or have you had an opportunity to meet people in person at a con or anything like that?
So I haven't been to a convention yet. I'm hoping to do one by the end of this year. It will be my first one. But right now I'm pretty big. I'm on Twitter every day, but that's not really the best place to really talk to me about like my books and stuff. I have like a Facebook group, and I have a Facebook page where I'll post like in progress stuff. And I'll ask questions, like, you know, the hard philosophical questions, just because I'm curious, and I'll post that there. But Facebook is definitely where I kind of talk to more people, and that's kind of where I'll take people from Twitter and I'll friend them on Facebook just because it's easier, because I can type paragraphs instead of, you know, 240 characters. So I find Facebook is an easier way to kind of get to a nice meaty conversation, but Twitter is good for, you know, hey, Noelle, I liked your book. And I'd be like, oh, that's super cool. And they'll reply with a dumb gif, because that's what you do.
I know, dumb gifs are like the currency of the internet. So, hey, just so you know, I mean, I actually, the first con I did was a local con that I didn't even know about. And it was only 15 minutes from where I live. So it was like a Saturday afternoon kind of thing. And I had so much fun, and it was so low key and not pressure at all. And, so you might be surprised to find something at like a local college or university, or, you know, even like a local library system might have like a local author event that you can participate in, just to kind of get your feet wet.
Yeah, that would be good, because I've been to conventions just like, you know, as a convention goer, and I kind of get overwhelmed. There's a lot of people there. So it might be kind of nice just to, you know, like break it in, just get used to like, you know, I'm totally cosplaying because I need to like have some sort of nerdy thing I do. But yeah, no, I'll totally maybe see what's around locally and yeah, see what's out there.
That's been my favorite event ever, and I still look forward to it every year. I mean, other cons that I get invited to or go to are fun, and I enjoy meeting people and stuff, but it's always a hassle, you know, having to travel somewhere and get a hotel or whatever, or if it's close enough to drive, it's still just such a long day or two. And whereas this, you know, 15 minutes from my house, and I drive down for Saturday morning, I drive home Saturday evening, and I got to meet a whole bunch of people and just have a great time and wear a costume or get dressed up or whatever. So I'd go for it.
Yeah, that sounds perfect. That's way less recovery time in terms of recharging my introvert batteries.
Yep. So Noelle, last kind of question for you, you know, you have Shadow's Hand, your website is noellenichols.com, and we'll have links to that in the show notes. But anything you want to just tell people before we close out here, or share about maybe Kilo, the character in Shadow's Hand, that would intrigue people to get them to go pick up the book?
Yeah, so I guess I'll tell you that in Shadow's Hand, with Kilo, he's a different kind of main character. He's not, you know, we've already said that, you know, a lot of people kind of glorify the battlefield and, you know, big Lord of the Rings. Like, as much as I love Lord of the Rings, you know, it's all about like the story and stuff. This is very much it's a very introspective story. It's very character driven. Like, if Kilo is not the main character, it would be a totally different story. And I'm going to give you guys a slight spoiler. So if you don't want to like hear a slight spoiler, just plug your ears in, la, 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 la. It's not a super big spoiler, but the story is actually told from two points of view. So you get Kilo, who is the older character. And then you also get to see, this is my cleverness. You get to see retrospectively how Kilo has become how he is by a younger character. And she's kind of discovering it at a much younger, you know, age. So she feels a little bit more, it's a little bit more overwhelming. So it's intriguing. And I hope you guys find it intriguing as well, that you get two different perspectives about, you know, things that are not at surface level. They're just not easy to solve. I've done a few like, would you rather questions in like I've done read-alongs and stuff. And it's always, people are like, what would I do? You know, like an example would be, would you rather have somebody you love hate you forever, but you know that they're safe, or would you rather them not be safe and have them like you? So it's like those kind of things where you're like, what would I do in that situation? And that's kind of, I'd say that's the experience for the entire series. It's not even the first book. It's just like the experience of what would I do? And, you know, this character is a little bit different. So that's kind of my spiel about why you should read my book, because it's different and new. And I think it's definitely an experience that's different for everyone, depending on, you know, how you judge Kilo's judging of right and wrong.
And that will wrap up this episode of the Fantasy Focus Podcast, people. Please make sure you catch up with us for a whole lot more from the whole Fantasy Focus community, whether you check in with us over on Facebook in our group, where we have regular author chats over there on a weekly basis. We have links to a lot of different things, great discussions going on, and that's over at Fantasy Focus on Facebook. Also over at our website at fantasy-focus.com, where you will find this podcast and a whole lot of other great content posted over there. If you want, you can go ahead and leave a comment on this episode and leave me a note about what's on your mind. Also on the website, on each podcast episode post, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast. I know I keep telling you that, but I know a lot of people forget. So if you're over there, head over to fantasy-focus.com, click on the link at the top for podcast, find any of the episodes, and right below the player is a link to subscribe via iOS or Android. That'll get you signed up there via your favorite podcasting apps, or you can even subscribe to get an email notification when new episodes come out. But you don't want to miss the episodes, because we've got some awesome authors coming up for you, and you don't want to miss out on any of that. We've already got a bunch scheduled for the next few months, and including the next podcast, which will have a pair of collaborating authors, a first for this show, having two authors on. We'll have Mel Todd and Doug Burby on the next episode, so check that out. That's it for this episode of the Fantasy Focus Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Jamie Davis, author of Fun Fantasy Reads. Don't forget to follow me over on Facebook. You can do that over at Jamie Davis Books and on my website at jamiedavisbooks.com, where you can get a free book just by signing up for the newsletter over there. Whatever you do, though, subscribe. Come back here for the next podcast. And always keep your eyes open, because there's magic all around you.